All right, you're listening to insert episode here. We no longer count episode numbers over on the TKO Advisor podcast because I don't know if I really care. We have a returning guest. Last time I talked to Ned Bellavis, he was making me pasta, homemade pasta and sourdough bread in his kitchen. We're off the road trip. We're back at home recovering from some water damage. So the sound might be a little bit off compared to regular CTO Advisor, CTO Dose. Ned is in his fancy studio. Ned, how's things going?
They're going great. I'm loving my fancy studio. It was a little threatened by flooding as well because we had Tropical Depression Ida come through a couple weeks ago, and it dropped, I don't know, like 7 inches of rain on us. And fortunately, our sump pump managed to do the job and keep the basement clear. But I was a little concerned for a while there.
It gets a little touch and go there for a while, doesn't it?
It does. It does. But yeah, the sump pump and the battery backup did their job. So thank you for that.
So speaking of concern, we're going to have a try to have a concise conversation about a really complicated topic, which is dev versus ops or ops versus dev. Basically, a governance conversation. There's a whole lot of stuff going on, and we don't have a whole lot of people to do that. What should developers know versus what should operations know? And we're going to pick a specific use case that I got into a really interesting conversation on Twitter about, which is replication services. Where should replication be managed? What types of replication should we use, so that we know that we can actually have visibility into the status of replication and fix it when it's broken? For the specific application, we're looking at, we're picking on our friends at Portworks, which is owned by Pure Storage. It is a Pure software play. It has nothing to do with Pure Storage arrays. It is a born in the cloud native solution. It allows you to basically connect containers to persistent volumes on any kind of block storage and replicate that to another metro cluster or to long distance for DR, and it orchestrates the recovery of your solutions. Very slick product. However, it raises a really interesting question. Who's responsible, Ned? I'm going to ask you this. Who's responsible for replication? I mean, as an enterprise architect, I see that, and the first thing that I think of is when it breaks, who fixes it? Do the developers who implement it fix it? Does the ops team fix it? Who monitors and fixes this?
Very good questions, and I think we can go even deeper than that, because the first thing I think of with replication is, what's the goal behind the replication, and who needs to understand what that replication does? Your replication, like you said, could be for DR, could be because you're running a multi-site architecture and you need synchronous replication between sites because sessions are going to toggle between them. So the biggest question is, what is the replication for, and who needs to understand that? Because they're going to lay down what I'd call the standards that defines what replication should be available and how it should be implemented. Does it need to be synchronous, asynchronous? Can it be 5 minutes behind? Can it be 10 minutes behind? Do you need snapshots of it so you can roll back to a snapshot? Like, lots of questions there. I think that's really going to come down to maybe the governance and compliance teams that sort of lay out, oh, okay, well, this is the data we're protecting and it needs this policy applied to it. And also the developers who understand what the actual data structures are that are being protected, and from the ops side, understanding what's possible with the storage that you have in place today and the network connectivity you have in place today.
So what you're describing to me is what we, you know, have described as an architectural review board in the past. Basically, if you're going to bring a new technology in, we need to make sure that that technology can be supported, it meets standards, it's implemented in a way that is consistent with our operating model. But again, there's two things that's popping up. One, that slows things down. Like, the whole point of cloud native one of the points of cloud native and adopting cloud technologies is to speed things up. help me understand the argument for slowing things down a bit to be able to properly support this in the long run.
Sure. And I think it's a lot of that upfront planning you have to do for any supporting platform or architecture. You know, when, say, Microsoft was building Azure and they were determining their replication strategy, they didn't hustle that through in a week, right? They had to take their time and plan out what types of replication will we support? What SLAs can we guarantee for that replication? And then they made that those various replication decisions available to those who would consume their service or their platform. And I think if you are a large enough organization where you have a similar situation, you need to make those architectural decisions almost at a platform level and then make choices available to the people consuming your services, which are going to be either business units or DevOps teams.
So let's talk about how something like this is injected into a organization's platform group. So we're going to kind of erase the conversation, the concept of dev and ops, because platform groups are complicated. They kind of, especially modern platform groups, they blur the line between dev and ops. A lot of these folks in the new platform group, and we can talk about infrastructure as infrastructure as a service, DevOps, etc. But they have these crossover skills in which they have folks on this team that can code, and they have folks on the team that know deep operations, network, storage, compute, virtualization, cloud technologies, etc. So I guess not erase it. Let's define what is a platform group.
Perfect. Yeah, that's where I was going to go next is it was a term that was relatively new to me until I'd say 3 or 4 months ago. I hadn't heard it come up a lot. And then through a series of podcasts that I listened to and a few that I ended up recording, I kept hearing this term platform team. So I decided to dig into it more. And it really is exactly what it sounds like. This is a totally separate team. And their responsibility is to provide a platform that other teams can consume. So we're not getting rid of DevOps. It's that DevOps is a practice, right? It's not a team. And the practice of DevOps is combining your developers and operations to accelerate software development. That's kind of the key idea. That's still being implemented by each product team or business unit that wants to consume the platform. The platform team's job is to build and manage that platform, to provide a service catalog, to provide SLAs, and provide tooling for the various DevOps teams, the business unit teams, to snap into that and monitor the status of their application that they're running on the platform. And the platform could be a couple different clouds. Some of that might be heavily abstracted away, or it could be a very loose abstraction where they know they're going to this particular cloud. And here are the services you're allowed to consume. Here are the guardrails that the platform team has put in place for you. And here is how you can monitor your application effectively. So the platform team is not to get in the way of what the DevOps teams are doing. Like, those teams still need to own their application and manage the development and operations of that application. The platform team is there to enable all the features and services that each business unit needs without, while making some opinionated architectural choices for them that support the compliance and security and all those other kind of things that you need in place as a modern organization.
So I'm going to go back and answer one of my own questions that I began to propose to you, which is, why should we slow down? And the reason you gave a very eloquent answer in the Azure example of replication. And again, I'm going to give a similar example in the enterprise. When cloud applications first started showing up in the enterprise, what would happen would be that the developers who developed the application needed to go on to the next project. In order to go on to the next project, they needed to lifecycle the application from active development to steady state operations. And when it went to steady state operations, that went to a completely different group. which, you know, back then we can equate to either the platform group or traditional IT operations. When that traditional IT operations group got the request to support the new app, they look at it and they say, wow, what is, I don't know any of this, like none of this fits into our support model. Basically, most enterprise shops are managed service providers at the core of it, and they can support a limited set of applications and or rather technologies that are built on. So if you brought in, you know, something based on Grafana and all these newish technologies, and the support team wasn't ready to accept supporting those technologies, support remained in the development team, and that reduced the overall speed to market for developing new applications because the development team was developing a practice they were not good at, which was operations. So we are getting back to the point of what should the development team know versus the operations team. And I'm going to stick a pin in that because I want to get in a point that was very important to the customers I talk to, which is a basic question. What do I do with my DBA? You know, whether you have 10 DBAs, one DBA, 50 DBAs, what do I do with the skill set? What do I do with the storage team or the members of the storage team as I think about platform versus ops versus developers? Where do I stick the talent at? And I don't think we're going to get to an answer on this podcast, but we can start giving insight into how you think about support and where you put resources to enable that support. Basic question, Matt, you're in the business of education.
Sure. Yeah.
What are some of the biggest around this topic of platform versus DevOps or platform teams enabling DevOps? What are some of the demands you're seeing from a training perspective? What are people asking to be skilled?
The most popular things that I'm seeing from an ops perspective is Kubernetes, understanding it. And that's a pretty large domain all by itself. And I don't know if anybody actually understands all of Kubernetes, but understanding how to operate Kubernetes, not develop applications for it, but how to actually operate it, monitor it. That's a pretty big area of demand, and I see a lot of growth there. Another one is declarative infrastructure as code. How do I, first of all, write it? Because I think most operation folks are slowly accepting the fact that they have to do some programming. So how do I develop infrastructure as code? How do I manage it? And how do, I guess the third big thing is starting to understand things like CI/CD, GitOps, code repositories. How do those all factor into managing and maintaining my infrastructure as code? Because that's sort of the next logical progression. And if you're being integrated into a DevOps style team where the code for the infrastructure and the code for the application might live in the same repo or adjacent ones, practicing the same software development techniques across both dev and ops makes a lot of sense. One thing that I want to mention about DevOps in general and the idea of application development and feature development is the best practice if you're trying to do a DevOps style practice within your organization is the team that develops the application is the same team that's responsible for operating the application. They don't hand that off to a separate operations team. They're responsible for that application throughout the lifetime of that application until maybe it gets ready to be retired and truly is just on life support, basically. But the idea is if you develop an application, it's probably a revenue generating application. And that's the thing you're going to continue to add new features and functionality to. So your developers and your operations people work together on that application. And I mean, the individual team members can continue to cycle through as they want to move on to different applications and projects, but the team itself stays responsible for that application and might even be in the on-call rotation for that application if something goes wrong, rather than throwing it over to an operations team who's like, I don't even know what a Grafana is.
And I think that is, I think, one of the key answers to what do I do with my DBA. I think one of the concepts that we have to start to erase in IT infrastructure is that there is a concept or there's this hard line between development and operations. And I know as I'm saying this, people are thinking about, wow, what about audit? What about compliance and making sure that the person who writes the application doesn't have the rights to deploy or change the application, making sure that security is in place at all levels. These are all questions that have to be answered as you're developing your DevOps process. It's going to be unique. Some of it is going to be universal, but some of it is going to be unique to your organization and the types of apps you deploy. It completely disrupts the traditional stack from a governance perspective. The VP of development, and we can, you know, air dirty laundry here. There's a VP of development and there's the VP of operations. What we're asking to happen is for the VP of development operations to either be put into one role, which is probably not realistic, or to have a collaboration between the two in which we have a process that overlaps both teams. So when we ask the question, where do we put the DBA? He may still exist in the same org, but now he has a dotted line to somewhere else. And I know as I'm saying this, everyone is thinking, yeah, Keith, we've tried that in the past. It doesn't work very well. Truth is, we have to try new things, some things over again, because the applications are going to get built and they need to be supported. And from a practical perspective, to go fast and be able to go fast and support these applications, we have to change our governance models alongside it.
Yeah, you'll hear this concept of shift left. And the biggest problem with the whole idea behind shift left is moving the security and the operations and infrastructure component to the closer to the beginning of the development lifecycle. That's often interpreted as the developer is now responsible for that. Like, I'm now expecting my developer to not only know how to write code, but also be a security expert and a compliance expert and an infrastructure expert. And that's not what shift left means. Shift left means you're bringing the folks who are subject matter experts in those different domains into the process earlier on. It's that whole go slow to go fast thing. At the beginning, you go slow. It's like you wouldn't ask a sprinter to go from completely cold to running the fastest 100 yards they've ever run in their life, right? That they would warm up first. Well, think of your development process. That's the warm-up period where you're bringing everything online. You're getting people warmed up. You're bringing in your compliance and your security and your infrastructure folks at the beginning of the conversation to map out all their various concerns. And now the developer knows what they need to do, and the rest of the folks have had their input. So the application that gets produced at the end already has the necessary controls in place. It already has the right infrastructure that it needs, rather than trying to slap all that stuff on at the end when it's much more difficult, because some of the decisions made early on in the process would have to be reversed or drastically altered. So I think that's a big component of it, is bringing folks in earlier on in the process and then embracing an automation workflow for the actual development of the application and the deployment of the application that's using all the principles and information that you learned at the beginning of the exercise. So I think if you adopt that sort of mindset, you can have a really good outcome. But if you say, oh, devs, you're just responsible for all this stuff now, and why didn't you get this weird esoteric compliance thing right? You're just going to burn out your devs, and they're going to go find a job that pays just as well and isn't asking them to do all that.
So going back to our original, in closing out, going back to our original use case, which was the Portworx replication. I like the concept, the technology, etc. What we're basically hearing from you, Ned, is that the replication and the ability to do this capability is not bad. It is a good thing, but it has to be something that's intentional. It can't be something where the developer of the application comes and says, oh, I can bypass all of my existing IT shackles, implement replication, and get my cluster highly available without being slowed down by IT. Sometimes it's okay to be slowed down, because if you don't have this skill within your level of responsibility to support it when it breaks, it's best to engage in the people who are experts in this. From a practical sense, whenever I look at a new replication technology inside of my data centers, I would go in and engage the networking folks, and I'd engage the storage folks. So one, I make sure there's enough network to do the replication. That's probably a good thing to know. And to see if there's any other paths. So should I use the traditional namespace, DNS namespace to replicate? Or if I use a alternative namespace, is there a dedicated set of circuits or links to do replication so I can ultimately meet my SLAs? So Ned, we're at time. We try and keep this to about 20 minutes or so, and we're at that point. And if people want to learn more about developing and developing DevOps practices or cloud governance, kind of day two, where should they look at?
These are a lot of the topics that we try to cover on the Day 2 Cloud podcast. So you can find that at day2cloud.io. That's easy to find. I also have my daily thoughts on my daily check-in, which you can find on anchor.fm. Just search for a daily check-in with Ned1313. And if you want to actually do a little education, learn a little about maybe Terraform or Vault or Microsoft Azure, you can check out my courses on Pluralsight.
All right. If you want to find out more about the CTO Advisor, you can find us on the web, thectoadvisor.com. You can find me on Twitter, @CTOAdvisor. DMs are open. You can find Ned on Twitter at Ned1313. Really easy Twitter handle to remember. Until then, talk to you next CTO Advisor podcast.